Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, August 10, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 568 of the Biden-Harris administration, 89 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, and our Patreon, as always, is BobSeskaShow.com. So today we're talking with gun control activist Andy Parker. 7 years ago this month, Andy's daughter Allison was shot and killed on live television while she was reporting the news for WDBJ7 in Roanoke, Virginia. I think we all remember hearing about that story when it happened, and some of us have even seen the horrifying video that was circulating at the time. Now, Andy's formed a PAC to raise money for candidates who support both gun safety laws and reforming social media. The PAC is called Andy's Fight, andysfight.com to donate. His book is called For Allison, The Murder of a Young Journalist and a Father's Fight for Gun Safety. And you can follow Andy on Twitter at AndyParkerVA. Links in the description for all of that stuff. Meantime, if you like what you hear today, please help support this show by subscribing to our bonus content at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Okay, this was an emotional and compelling chat. You're going to want to listen all the way through to the end. So here we go.
Bob Seska!
Well, hey, Bob.
Hey, there he is. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
I'm good.
We had one of the weirdest introductions ever. Cliff Schechter, one of your advisors, called me up and asked me if I could help you guys out with adding a video to Twitter, and we couldn't unravel the mystery of creating a thumbnail or something like that. It's just like, oh, hi, Andy, I'm Bob. Now let's figure out this problem on Twitter together.
But yeah, thankfully you came to the rescue and it worked, and I have George Takei to thank for it.
Well, what was the deal with George Takei?
Well, George, you know, he's one of my followers. I mean, you know, when I ran for Congress, you know, I had this woman that I hired, and my initial thought was, well, why do I need somebody to handle Twitter for me? I have 980 followers. I mean, I can do that stuff myself.
Yeah.
And then I realized very quickly that no, I needed, because as soon as I announced, you know, it was, I mean, I got 3 million impressions according to, you know, the analytics and all of that. But she just said, look, you leave it alone. Let me do this, which I think most people are, you know, certainly anybody in Congress. I mean, most of them have some of a staffer or somebody like a comms person that does all their Twitter stuff.
Yeah, a lot of celebrities do that too. Yeah.
a lot of celebrities, you know, people that with huge, you know, much bigger followings than I do. I mean, I now have close to 60,000. I mean, it was like 59, 8 or whatever it is. So, but it increased very quickly. And then I realized, yes, I need somebody to manage this. So, you know, when the campaign was over, and so I really never paid any attention to it. I, you know,
so how does George come into all this?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Oh, okay.
So,
gotcha.
So, yeah. So I didn't, yeah, it's a, I always like to make a short story long, but, so I'm going, somebody said, well, go, you know, take a look at Twitter analytics just to see, you know, you can learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I went into Twitter analytics, and what it does is it shows you, you know, you go through by month, and it doesn't give you a tremendous, you know, an enormous amount of data, but you can see, you know, in one particular area, it's like your top follower. Mm-hmm. Well, in February, my top follower was George Takei. Mr. Sulu is following me. Right. You know, I'm going through and I'm looking at some of the other, it's like Mary Trump, Maria Shriver, are you kidding? I mean, so I'm seeing that all these people, you know, that I had no idea that they were, you know, following me on Twitter, mm-hmm. are there. And so what I did was because I couldn't get it through Twitter analytics, I ended up finding a software program or an app that would pull all of your Twitter data and, you know, just all the metrics and, you know, analytics and all that stuff. But the main thing for me was who are the people that have the biggest followings that are following me? Mm-hmm. And so from that, I was able to deduce, you know, I was able to go through that list. And that was part of the reason why, you know, why there was such a sense of urgency when you and I talked a couple of weeks ago or whenever it was, because I went through that list and I'm, you know, that's when I'm seeing, you know, George and, you know, Maria Shriver and Mika Brzezinski and, you know, all these people.
Oh, that's incredible.
Shit.
Yeah.
It is. So in advance of the launch, I sent them all, you know, like the top 70 people, I sent them a DM that said, hey, I'm launching this pack tomorrow at noon. Mm-hmm. And so that's when George replied and he said, hey, you know, and I actually included the YouTube video, not the one that we embedded that you shrunk and we were able to stick into Twitter, but I incorporated that. And he said, hey, just a tip. If you don't do a video that conforms to Twitter standards, it's not going to be effective. Nobody will see it.
Twitter,
right?
The algorithm buries the YouTube video.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, so that's the long story of thank you, George, for pointing that out.
Yeah.
And that's why we had that such a, you know, an issue, because we couldn't, you know, damn sure couldn't figure it out. Cliff couldn't either. So,
what happened with your run for Congress then?
Well, I didn't lose in the primary. In fact, I was going to win the primary. Mm-hmm. I hired a guy that I trusted who ran a successful House of Delegates campaign. He ran Chris Hurst, who was Allison's boyfriend. He ran Chris's first campaign and won. He ran a state Senate campaign for the Senate majority leader who won. And then he got promoted to be the head of the Virginia Democratic caucus or party.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a pretty big deal. And this guy, you know, I talked to him, in early December. I said, hey, do you want to, you know, I'd love for you to manage my campaign. And he said, yeah, I can do that. Be glad to. I need to, I need to wait until my gig ends with the Virginia Dems. He said, but what I can do is sort of advise behind the scenes. And I've got a guy that I can, you know, that's perfect. You know, he can be your field guy and he can handle all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I.e., you know, the most important thing at that point was to get valid signatures to get on the ballot. I mean, you have to have 1,000 signatures to get on the ballot.
Right.
And so if you know, the rule of thumb is if you need 1,000, you need to get 1,500 because just to be safe, because you're going to get stuff kicked out. And every meeting that we had, you know, we'd have Zoom meetings weekly, and every meeting, I would say, you know, how are we coming on the petitions? Oh, everything's going great. Everything's fine. So like 10 days before the deadline, you know, this guy that was supposed to be getting the petitions done, and, you know, he hired stringers to go out and collect signatures as well. Mm-hmm. I said, well, Carter, how many signatures do we have at this point? He said, well, we've got about 500 or 600. I said, that makes me very freaking nervous.
Yeah.
He said, you know, and both he and Andrew Whitley, who was the, you know, the guy that I, you know, that was supposed to take over in April to, you know, because I didn't, early on, I didn't need a campaign manager because my job was to raise money.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. As a candidate, you know, all you have to be, you go to the occasional event, which there weren't that many. And in the meantime, you spend 6 hours a day in call time raising mm-hmm. money. And that was my job.
So you're already running at this point before all the signatures have been collected.
Correct.
Gotcha.
You know, I was running, you know, I had a primary opponent, which again, I thought I, you know, with I had name recognition. People knew who I was. You know, I was running as a moderate Democrat. You know, most mm-hmm. of the stuff that the other guy and I agreed on, you know, we agreed on, but his priority was climate change. Mine was on guns and Google.
Yeah.
My hook phrase for, you know, the gun issue and social media issue. And so, you know, with the name recognition I had and the momentum and the money that I was raising, I, you know, it was kind of a foregone conclusion. And even the guy, you know, my opponent even confided to some of his folks. He said, well, I can't win this. But he's the nominee because at the end of the day, these guys turned in. It's like, yeah, well, you know, okay, we got all the petitions done. We turned them in. I said, well, how many did you turn in? He said, well, we turned in 1,200. And I'm going, that's cutting it very, very, very close.
Yeah. And but it's still over the threshold, right? I mean, it was still more.
Well, it was over the threshold, except that they straight up, both of them straight up lied to me. They turned in less than 1,100 signatures. And of course, out of that, a bunch of them got kicked out. A good chunk of where they were canvassing was, you know, on the mall in Charlottesville, right? The mall in Charlottesville on a weekend. If you go to the, which I did that one, you know, one time, I, you know, when it was like, well, let me help you.
Yeah.
And I went up and well, half the people, probably over half of the people that are wandering or, you know, up and down the mall, they're from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you're not going to get the signature. So we ended up 50 signatures short.
Oh God. 50. Yeah.
Yep.
That's heartbreaking. That had to have been, your head must have exploded.
You know, and I basically told these guys, I said, you know, I mean, there was no apology. There was like, oh yeah, we screwed up. What a shame. And I just said, you know, if there's anything that I can do at this point, it's to make sure that you sons of bitches never work in politics again.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately politics is they're filled with people like that. I mean, you know, this isn't the first time that this has happened, and you have people that basically just get recycled.
Yeah.
You know, I think both of them are now in Wisconsin, and I think one of them is like a field guy for some campaign. I mean, you know, these guys should never be running, you know, they should never be involved in any campaign. Certainly a congressional camp or state campaign. They shouldn't be involved in a campaign for, you know,
mayor of McDonaldland. They shouldn't even deal with that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Do you ever feel inclined to call their current clients and say, hey, listen to these guys. I don't think these guys are on the level.
Yeah. I mean, if we can find them, we could,
right.
And I think the word, you know, certainly that's why they're not in Virginia anymore. Mm-hmm. Their word has followed them. And, I've got a friend of mine in Wisconsin who's an operative up there. And he said, you know, if I can find them, you know, I'll make sure that the word gets out and we'll we'll do what we can.
Yeah.
But, right. You know, I mean, it is what it is. And it was, yeah, it was heartbreaking to your point. It was devastating. And, but, you know, Bob, the thing is, as I tell people, look, as heartbreaking and humiliating and devastating as it was, is it the worst thing that happened to me?
Mm-mm.
No, that happened 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, you just kind of keep, you got to keep it in perspective like that.
Is it something you do again? Do you think you'd try to run again?
That's an interesting question that has been asked.
and maybe something you can't necessarily answer because of Andy's fight. Is that
it? Yeah. Well, it's not that. It's just that, you know, right now, you know, that's when the campaign was over, that's why, when I decided, look, I've got to do something, you know, I can't just let this, you know, all the work that I put into it go away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not really, I wasn't thinking about running again, and I was inclined not to, just because I knew, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot. It's, you know, when you're calling 200 to 300 people in an afternoon, and, you know, most people were nice. A lot of people were not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a reason why people don't run for politics. And, or, you know, get involved in politics. And one of them is, you know, the issue that I had with my petitions. And then, you know, it just the work that goes into it. And I didn't mind the work that, you know, I was kind of, they call me a freak, because I actually like call time. Because when you did actually talk to someone, it was enjoyable. I mean, it was having a conversation, and I had a good story to tell. And so, from that standpoint, I enjoyed it. But, you know, I've had people like, you know, Mike Henry, who's very astute. He's Tim Kaine's chief of staff and a good guy, and somebody I talk to, you know, on a regular basis. And he said, well, you know, listen, 2022 it's shaping up to be tough. It was going to be tough for you to win.
Hmm.
Now, that said, you know, with the way things are going now, I think it's going to be, you know, with Roe and all that's going on, I think it probably, you know, I kept thinking that fortunes were going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But that having been said, he said, but now 2024, that's a whole different deal. And I said, Mike, the last thing I'm thinking about is running again anywhere, anytime. I think I can have more fun with this pack and doing the kinds of things and supporting people that I like and supporting the causes that I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And so really that's, you know, I feel like that I made, I've got another expression for it, but in the interest of being, I'm trying to make lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got a rare interest, and that is communicating with people, reaching out to people, meeting people, shaking hands, mm-hmm. the whole thing that is required if you're running for office. And that's one thing that I will never have. People always say, well, have you ever considered running for office, Bob? I said, no. Knocking on doors, meeting people at the mall, things like that. Not my arena, not in the slightest. So I tip my hat to you. That's a rare thing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the thing with the pack. I can still do that. I mean, we're planning a, you know, the, what I call the, we haven't exactly nailed down the term yet, or the handle yet, but it's the Guns and Google tour.
Yeah.
And which again is the catchphrase for, you know, what my issues are with gun safety and reforming and doing internet reform. But, you know, we're going to go, Barbara and I are going to go across country and hit campaigns, you know, work with campaigns where, you know, we can be helpful and we can talk to people, and we, you know, I can kind of do the stuff that I would have been doing as a candidate, mm-hmm. but without all the other baggage that goes along with it.
That's outstanding. And you were mentioning before about how fortunes have changed over the past few weeks even. So are you feeling pretty good about what's going to happen in November, everywhere from the Virginia 5th and retaining maybe even a House majority? I hope that's...
Well, I think that it's still going to be tight. I mean, I, you know, it may sound vain and egotistical, but I think that if I were the candidate right now, I'd be feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about the other, you know, Josh Thronberg is the candidate that's running against Bob Good. You know, he's a good guy. Thronberg is. But whether he's got the juice to overcome the demographics in the fifth, because you still have, if you take Charlottesville and parts of Lynchburg out of the equation, it's still extremely red. Mm-hmm. And these people just, you know, they're rabid. It doesn't matter, you know, if Trump goes to jail, I think these people are still, you know, you can't convince them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, there may be too many of those folks, you know, unless every single person in every single Democrat and independent in Charlottesville and Lynchburg and Danville turn out to vote. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be able to get it over the finish line. You know, that said, I think, you know, there are races like Abigail Spanberger and Elaine Luria, mm-hmm. who are very vulnerable, but I think it's looking better for them. You know, the atmosphere has changed, and I think it makes them not necessarily safe, but it makes their race a little bit easier.
All right, more with Andy here in just one second. But first, here's the best way to listen to the Bob Seska Show without all of these pesky commercial interruptions. Just go right now to our Patreon page at bobseskashow.com. Scroll down to the link for the ultimate edition of the podcast and sign up for just $15 per month. In exchange for your generous support, we're going to give you a completely commercial-free version of the Tuesday show, the Wednesday show, this show right here, and the Thursday shows, plus the Shadow Docket Show every Tuesday and Thursday. You're going to get that included in that level of support. But wait, more things. You're also going to get the Friday After Party podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson, all for just $15 per month. Again, that's bobseskashow.com, and we thank you.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska plays more music.
You mentioned 7 years since Allison's murder. The seventh anniversary is coming up. I think, is it August 24? Is that
26? Right,
26. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know what? By the way, I want to talk about guns and Google here in just a second. Yep. But first, sure. Tell me about your daughter, Allison.
If you want me to tell you about Allison, how much time have you got?
Yeah.
She was one of those, I mean, exceptional, rare people that, you know, anything that she touched, she did well. I mean, mm-hmm. she was a competitor, you know, swam in the state swim meet against kids that were, you know, spending hours in the, you know, like 12 hours or I don't know how or many every morning, you know, in a small town like Martinsville. I think she got 3 hours of training in the pool a week.
Wow.
And yet she was competing with these people. She was an unbelievable gymnast that, you know, again, went to state competitions, and then she got too tall, and that's when she became a swimmer. Mm-hmm. But literally, you know, everything that she did well. And, you know, she was, it was interesting because she was the ugly duckling when she was a kid. I mean, you know, she was goofy looking, and, you know, I was, it's funny because I was watching a documentary about Shania Twain, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, what does Shania Twain have to do with this? Well, they were going back and showing videos of Shania Twain when she was like, you know, 11, 12 years old. And it was like, God, this kid is gawky looking and goofy. And it was like Allison. I mean, she went from the ugly duckling into this, you know, beautiful young woman who was, you know, she was as beautiful on the inside as she was on the outside. You know, she would turn heads when she walked into a room, but she was, I tell people, you know, in two words, what was she like? She was a kind soul.
Wow.
She was a kind soul. Yeah. And she, you know, the success she had as a journalist, as you know, she loved being on TV, but it didn't go to her head. And people knew that. And that's why, you know, when you tell people, when her name comes up, everybody knows. And it's almost like, you know, it's like people knew where they were when Princess Diana was killed. Oh, yeah. You know, when she, and it, but it was, they remember it, and they remember, you know, what kind of person she was. And, you know, to hear the stories of the people that she interacted with that, you know, said she was just very gracious and kind. And, you know, I guess the last thing I'll say about that was when we had her celebration of life, and it was just a big, it was what she would have wanted. It was just a giant gathering, a party of people, a band playing. I mean, you know, it was great. And this guy comes up in a suit. We never put it, I mean, we didn't know who was coming. We showed, you know, we got there and it was 500 people. And that was just through word of mouth. And guy comes up in a suit I'd never seen before, and he introduces himself and he said, "I'm Steve Kappas. I'm the executive producer of the CBS Evening News."
Wow.
And I went, you know, nice to meet you. And he said, "I just wanted you to know that she would have been with us one day."
Wow. What an immense compliment.
Yeah. And he wasn't kidding. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't kidding. She just had that. You know, that there was that something special. I mean, it was, you know, I did a lot of interviews. I mean, I did nonstop interviews in the days after she was killed, because I decided that, you know, that day that I was going to do whatever I could, whatever it took to try and prevent other parents from having to go through the same hell that, and, you know, the wrenching, you know, the gut punch. I mean, all the adjectives that you can describe. I just didn't want another family to go through that. And I went on Megyn Kelly's program that night. Chris and I went on. And then, you know, the next day I had a CNN producer at my doorstep. And so, you know, from that time on, I was doing nonstop interviews. And I just remember the one, I think you'll get a kick out of this. I mean, I knew who Anderson Cooper was, but the rest of them, all these sins, you know, I didn't know any of these people, because I really never watched, you know, I would read the Post and all of this, but I never really paid any attention to, you know, the personalities that were on, you know, on these, on the cable news shows, except you know, Megyn Kelly, I knew who she was. And that's, you know, it's like, well, she pissed off Trump. So it's like, okay, I'll go on her show that night. Because I was getting literally, I mean, one email after another. And oddly enough, it was from Fox News. I mean, it was will you go on Greta? No Scientologist for me. You know, and then I'd get another from a producer. Would you go on Hannity? It's like, no. Of course, in retrospect, I wanted to do that later to go toe to toe with him. But at that point it was like, I'm not going to go on this shit. And then, when the thing from the producer from Megyn Kelly came in, I thought, okay, yeah, she had a dust up with Trump. She's probably not terrible. And she would, you know, treat us. Okay. So I asked Chris, I said, do you want to do this? And so we went. So anyway, from that, it just spawned, you know, everything. And it seemed like the more interviews I did, the more, you know, people wanted me to go on their programs. But I just, you know, this is the long story, the long intro to the short story and the impact, that Allison had. It's hard for me to get this out without, you know, because I remember we were, they had a, most of the stuff, most of the interviews in the early going, you know, I was just looking into a camera. Well, CNN, literally, they had a live truck parked out, you know, in front of my house. And then they actually ran a monitor, you know, out. And we did most of this stuff on my deck. And it was, you know, I was doing an interview with Poppy Harlow, who I didn't know. I mean, I looked her up and, you know, she's this blonde, you know, very pretty blonde, you know, anchor. And so as we were getting through the interview, and a lot of these were, you know, obviously very tough and painful. And I broke down a few times on camera, and it's like, well, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the interview, I said, Poppy, you know, she was going to be you. Mm-hmm. She was going to be you one day. And I don't know if anybody's ever done this on, you know, that I've seen, but she literally broke down and cried.
Wow.
She broke down and cried on, you know, from her anchor desk on, I'll never forget that.
Unbelievable. So. Yeah. And, you know, just hearing you tell these stories, the thought that keeps reoccurring in my head is hearing you talk about how you enjoyed reaching out to people. And so much of journalism, so much of reporting is about your ability to reach out and communicate with people, whether it's a source, whether it's the subject of a news story. You have to have that talent, that ability to be able to ask probing questions and to enjoy the interactions with other people. And that was certainly a talent that Allison had.
The other piece of it, and I think the maybe even the most important piece of it, is that as a journalist, you have to be able to tell a story.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to tell a story. And Allison was the consummate storyteller. I mean, she had to come up with a story and tell a story every single morning. And she did it. I mean, she was great at it. I mean, it was, she pulled it all together. She, you know, she was able to line up her guests and tell that story. And because she was able to do that, I mean, she won, you know, obviously this is posthumously, she won the Ted Yates Award, which was given to someone that was, you know, I mean, that was sort of different. It was because she was killed. I mean, it was, but then she won for an Emmy for Best Morning Reporter, and she won won two Edward R. Murrow Awards, and they don't give that out just to anybody. They don't, you know, that's something that's like, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time, but the Murrow Award is like the Oscar.
Yeah.
The Emmy's like the Emmy, the Murrow for journalists and for broadcast, that's the Oscar. And she won two because she did a documentary that was, you know, terrific, that she won one for, and then another one that she got halfway through it, and then she was killed, and Chris finished it for her, but they won Murrows for it.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And it's storytelling.
Right. Yeah. That's such a huge part of it. And it's, I think we sometimes underestimate how challenging that is, and how you absolutely need to have the right set of wiring in your head to be able to do that successfully. A lot of people can kind of tell a story and kind of work their way through it and maybe get to some sort of conclusion, maybe get to some sort of point, but it really takes serious talent. And I know you've got that skill. You can tell that she was her father's daughter in that sense. So that's something that you can't help but to notice that. Yeah.
That's kind of you. And she was in band. I mean, that was another thing. You know, she picked up the trumpet, and then she decided, well, you know, I'm going to play the French horn too. So she played that. You know, she was a French horn player and a trumpet player in the band. And, you know, they did take band trips every year. And in sophomore year, they went to Disney World. Junior year, they decided, well, we can't go to Disney World this year. We're going to go to Atlanta. And so they went to tour the CNN, you know, building and offices. And that's where, you know, there's a picture of her in front of the big CNN logo out front. And that's when she decided, this is what I want to do.
Wow.
And I mean, she literally, I mean, and then, I mean, she went into beast mode and, you know, went to JMU. She could have gotten into any, you know, she could have gotten into any university in Virginia or other places. Well, any place, I don't know about Harvard or Yale, but, she decided to go to James Madison because they had the School of Media Art and Design. They had a journalism school and in particular, a television journalism school. UVA didn't have that, believe it or not. They had no program. I think they had journalism, but not like what she was looking for. And so, she went to JMU, graduated a semester early, could have graduated a year early, but, you know, was enjoying herself.
What year did she graduate?
She graduated in 2012.
Okay, gotcha.
And so she graduated in December of 2012 and had a job offer before she got her diploma.
That's all you need to say. Because clearly she had what it took to get to that stage that quickly. That's unheard of. So, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And part of that, I mean, she had a little bit of help just because she had a reel. She interned, you know, the tragic irony of this is she interned at WDBJ Channel 7, you know, that summer.
Yeah.
And that's when she met, you know, her killer was working at the station at the time, and they really didn't have any interaction. I mean, again, he was just a, you know, weird dude, and she didn't, you know, she went out on like a ride with him at one point, and that was about the only interaction that she had with him. But, you know, when she got the intern job, I said, well, do you think they're going to, Allison, do you think they'll put you on air? I mean, are you going to, you know, this is what your major is. You think you'll do a story? She said, oh, Dad, they'll probably just have me, you know, bring in coffee or something like that. Well, sure enough, they put her on air. They put her on air. Like, I think she did at least two or three hits. And that was kind of unheard of too. Yeah. And it pissed off some of the people, you know, the people that were, I think, including this, her killer, they didn't like that an intern was going out and doing stories. And I, you know, you can imagine a parent's pride when you see your child, you know, on doing a report on television. It was just, you know, it was just, yeah. It was, we were over the moon. And so she used that to, you know, she put that, you know, the clips together to send out to news directors, you know, and she didn't really send out that many. She sent them out to, you know, we just said, hey, look, don't go to, you know, we don't want you to go to North Dakota or any place. Of course, you know, when you're just starting out, a lot of times you don't have the choice, but it's like, yeah, just pick someplace warm and someplace close and all of that. And the news director at WCTI, that they're in the top, you know, top 100 stations in the country. They handle New Bern, Jacksonville, North Carolina, and Greenville, North Carolina. And so this guy, you know, she sent the video, you know, her tape, her demo tape to this guy, you know, like on a Wednesday. Well, he calls her up on Friday and says, you know, or asks, you know, they talk for a little bit. And then he said, well, we'll get back with you. And then on Monday, he offers her a job.
Wow.
And I said, she said, Dad, what do I do? I said, well, do you want to, she said, cause I told him, I said, well, don't you want to meet me? He said, no, I see everything I need to see right here. And, yeah. And so, you know, I said, Allison, is this something you want to do? Cause it's, you know, it's the beach, it's close. And she said, well, yeah. I said, well, then you call him back. Cause at the time I was a headhunter. I mean, that's what I did. You know, I got jobs for people. So I was in that business. I said, if this sounds like a good fit for you and you like the guy, then you accept the offer. And, you know, she did. And they offered her a salary that was, you know, a little bit more than what she was you know, what she was expecting. She thought she won the lottery. So,
she probably would have done it for free. I mean, ultimately, when you're at that stage, gigantic accomplishment.
Well, and to finish the icing on the cake was, you know, they were hiring her to work out of the Greenville office with another reporter. And so they had her come to Greenville first to learn the ropes and to New Bern, so she was, you know, it's like, well, where are you going to live for a month? If you're going to be, you know, you can't live in New Bern the whole time and commute. And so, you know, we were looking around. I ended up finding her a short-term rental at a retirement home.
Wow.
I said, Scooter, that was my nickname, but I said, Scooter, you know, just why don't you, you know, make sure you go in and have some of those overcooked green beans with the patrons at the old folks home. So she lived at the old folks home for a month. And then while she learned the ropes, they actually put her on the air the very first day that she was there. And it was like, oh my God. Mm. Well, they saw her talent. And then, you know, again, 3 weeks after she was there, the news director said, listen, you know, we're kind of changing our thinking here. How would you like to run your own bureau? The Jacksonville bureau, you know, we had someone leave, you know, you'll have your own cameraman. Would you like to do it? She's like, well, of course. So, Jesus. You know, here she is a month out of school and she's running her own bureau. Wow. at a top 100 station. So
incredible.
Yeah. That's probably more, you know, so I'm glad we had the time to share that. And,
yeah. Thank you. And thank you for sharing, because it's got to be difficult for you. And so,
well,
I'm grateful for that, Andy. Yeah.
No, I never get tired of telling Allison stories and in my book, I one of the cathartic experiences that I did in my life was I wrote a book called For Allison, The Murder of a Young Journalist and a Father's Fight for Gun Safety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, the day she was killed, there's some pretty heavy subject matter and it was hard for me to get through. But yeah. But there are other parts of it. We're, you know, sharing stories about Allison like this. And, you know, if you've got the time, I want to tell you a real quick one.
Yes, please.
Is part of the book mm-hmm. and part of it's my favorite story. So in a rural area, like, you know, where she was, there was, you know, there were the stories were, and Jacksonville is home to Camp Lejeune. And it was either, you know, Marine comes home just, you know, for a celebration, or, you know, bad Marine kills, you know, shakes baby to death, or, you know, so it was kind of an either or thing like that. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of, you know, drug busts and stuff like that. And Allison lived at the courthouse. She always, you know, she always was trying to get the scoop. I mean, she wanted to be the first to report. And she developed a great relationship with the sheriff down there and law enforcement. And they all knew her and trusted her. Well, there was, there was one time that one of the law enforcement, her contacts there said, hey, Allison, we've got a we're working on a development here and just wanted to give you the heads up on it, but you can't, you know, you got to embargo this. You can't say anything until, you know, this thing breaks, which she didn't. Well, it got word got out and another station ran the story. Well, her newsroom was, you know, it was like, oh, you can't do, you know, why didn't you do that? It's like, because I have ethics. And so as at the end of the day, you know, she was vindicated through all of this. And the other station basically got cut off from any dealings with law enforcement. So
yeah,
I guess a few weeks later, you know, they called Allison back. So at that point, she was, because they couldn't just ignore it, but they would call Allison to tell them what was going on. And then they'd wait about, you know, 4 or 5 hours and call the other stations.
So nice. That is, so, you can't put a price tag on that kind of contact.
No, you can't. Yeah. And so she, they said, look, there's going to be a big bus going down at this, you know, meth. So she said, oh, great. She said, well, I'm going to get the live truck. They only have one live truck. So they get a live truck to go out to this, to the scene. Mm. And, so, you know, it, she's going to go live at 10 o'clock. It was, yeah, I guess it was 10 o'clock. And so, you know, it was about a quarter till they're all set up. They're ready to go. They're, you know, she's watching what's going on with this thing. And the captain or whoever was in charge of this investigation at about a quarter to 10 goes, okay, boys, that's it. We're good. Let's wrap it up. And she's like panicked. She's like, but I'm going to, please, can you like, I've got to go live here. And can you, you know, what can we do? And he said, oh, Allison, don't worry about it, Allison. We'll just, you know, we'll take care of you. So what do they do when they, you know, when she goes live, he turns on he gets all the cops to turn the, you know, the light bars on. So there's their lights going, there's all this stuff. And they're, you know, these guys are walking around, you know, pretending, you know, with notepads and stuff, like they're writing stuff down that they weren't. I mean, they were basically recreating. Sorry, it just. Yeah. They recreated it for her. Wow. They recreated it for her because they trusted her.
Just incredible.
It's always hard for me to get through that. I love telling the story, but it's hard to get through because that kind of rapport with her, and because they trusted her.
Yeah.
And it wasn't make, you know, that wasn't fake news. They weren't trying to, you know, and I said in my book, it's like, oh, you know, people say, oh, see, they're doing fakes. No, they weren't. I mean, they were just basically doing what they did, but they did it for her.
Yeah.
So
they clearly respected her professionalism and knew they would get a straight deal with her. And that doesn't always happen in journalism, unfortunately. And sometimes we see examples of that, but clearly that was not the case with Allison. And what an incredible, thank you for that, Andy. I have to ask you, with Andy's fight, obviously there's a practical effect to forming Andy's fight, this pack, but there's got to be a healing aspect of it too. Do you find that, you know, forming this organization and reaching out to people, do you find that is helping you to cope with her loss even 7 years down the road? I mean, you never fully heal, but
no, you don't. And it, you know, if I weren't doing this, I don't know what I'd do. I mean, it's, you know, you try and you find your purpose, and you have to do something to try and make a difference. And that's what I, you know, Allison made a difference in life. And that's what I'm trying to do, is just, you know, in essence, follow in her footsteps and try and do as much as I can and make the most of a, you know, what was a terrible situation. And, you know, one thing that really heartened me was when the campaign ended and I had, you know, I mean, we had expenses, but, you know, I was able to raise a good chunk of, you know, a good chunk of money. But, you know, the right thing to do, you know, was to call, you know, or to email, or and in most cases, I did a combination. My top donors, I called personally.
Yeah.
And, you know, and emailed everybody else because I had 2,000 individual donors. And I basically told these, you know, everybody, look, you know, this isn't this. And I didn't go into detail because, I mean, you're the first person really that's, you know, from a media perspective that has heard the, you know, the nitty gritty on this. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, and, you know, when you tell people, you know, what actually happened, you know, and I didn't want to do, as much as I wanted to tell that story to the press, look, your name's on it. You're responsible. You're the captain of the ship. You can't, you know, it's on you. Yeah. So basically what I said is, you know, told people was, this didn't turn out the way I wanted it to turn out. I put my faith in people that let me down. And that was the extent of it. I said, but, you know, that having been said, I want to try and do something with this and support candidates that are committed to the things that I'm interested in. And that is, you know, common sense gun legislation, which thankfully we made a small step toward, Congress did, but we still have, we've got to get rid of assault weapons and, mm-hmm. and high capacity magazines. So that was one piece of it. And of course, then the issue to reform social media. But I said, I want to help support candidates. I want something to this money to go to candidates, to help candidates that are in line with, you know, what I believe in and what I think you believe in. Mm-hmm. And so I sent that, talked to the individual donors, probably about 20 of them, of my biggest donors. And then I emailed it to all the rest of the donors. And I'm sitting there, wait before all this happened, I'm waiting for the pitchforks and the torches to show up at my doorstep with people, how dare you do this and da da da. Bob, out of the 2,000 people, 2,000 donors that contributed to my campaign, you know how many people wanted their money back?
I would imagine very few.
Seven.
Wow.
I was heartened and stunned at the same time. So, people, I think, believe in the project and it's been, so far so good. We're really just now getting started with it, and planning, what to do, with regard to tactics, and it's going to be bare knuckle stuff. I mean, we're not pulling any punches. We're going to do stuff like billboards that that essentially troll the other, the bad guys, if
good,
you will.
Good.
Because that's more fun than, I mean, I could have set it up where I just go, okay, Elaine Luria, here's, $10,000 or whatever it is. But I'd much rather do something that me and Cliff can concoct to do some really good.
I assure you, Cliff won't let you down either. We're talking about Cliff Schechter here. Yeah, Cliff Schechter is one of the best in the business, especially when it comes to messaging. So
the message that we just want to do some we want to troll these guys. We we want to do some rat fuckery. So that's the plan.
Right. Have any other families of gun victims reached out to you? I know I recently met Fred Gutenberg. We were on a show together. We were on a podcast together. And I had a chance to chat with him briefly. And he seems like a really great guy. Obviously, he lost a child at Parkland, I believe it was. So do you?
Fred and I, we're friends and we communicate on a regular basis. I mean, his daughter, like Allison, there's, his daughter was a dancer too. I know, sadly, I wish I had met these folks in a different way, but we're all members of the club that no one wants to join.
Yeah. God damn it. Part of this is, your slogan is kind of guns and Google. Talk about the social media reform aspect of Andy's fight. What kind of prompted you to go down that road, and what is it specifically that you're doing along those lines?
Well, what prompted me to go down that road is this has been a very public, fight, as it were. Allison was killed on live television.
Right.
And that video, the shooter's GoPro video, as well as the video that Adam, her cameraman, took, those videos have been floating around on Facebook and YouTube and still are.
That's gotta be torturous for you.
Well, it's, it's torturous in the sense that I know it's out there. Yeah. It's not torturous because I've never seen it. I don't want to see it. I've come close to stumbling into it a few times, but fortunately I've been able to avoid it.
Yeah.
But, it's, just knowing, number one, that it's out there, and for people that can stumble upon it, I mean, obviously it would be traumatizing for me and my family, but just for anybody else that happens upon it, I mean, they shouldn't see, you know, they shouldn't have to be subjected to that. Kids, I mean, you know, kids can see it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's been my fight to get, you know, and I've been fighting it for 6 years now, or, you know, actually 6.5 years to fight Google and these platforms to get them to remove this. Well, the problem is that they won't. I mean, they won't because they don't have to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been maintaining for years, and, you know, working with people that are down in the weeds technically with this stuff, that know that, you know, these platforms, and Francis Haugen, who was the Facebook whistleblower, validated everything I've been saying. And that is, these platforms monetize my daughter's murder, not just hers, but, you know, other stuff.
Yep.
They want to keep you on there. There is no incentive for them to get rid of violent content or harassment, or, you know, whatever or ghost gun sales or illegal drugs. I mean, they want you on their platforms because that's how they make money. And so, you know, my solution is, you know, people say, well, you know, if you take away, well, they do this because, and they can get away with it because of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act that was passed in 1996. And what it did was it gave, again, total immunity for any kind of liability for these platforms. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in 96, it all sounded fine, no big deal, you know, and it was created to, the law was created to promote freedom of expression, nothing to get in the way of anything on this new, you know, exciting medium, you know, called the internet. Well, but nobody envisioned Facebook and Google and YouTube at that point.
Yeah.
And so what they, you know, what they've done, you know, the guys, the original founders of Google said, you know, our motto is don't be evil. Well, then they changed it. I don't know what it is now, but clearly they, you know, completely disregarded their mantra. And now it's just, well, you know, I'm sorry, but let's make money. And, so that's what they do. I mean, so that's, you know, why, that's what prompted me to get into this. It is because, you know, again, it's not just for me. You know, there are other families that have been abused like this as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a laundry list of them, and there's nothing that they can do about it. So, you know, my solution to it is pretty simple, and it's basically stealing from a law professor that was at the, in Massachusetts. I don't think she was at Harvard, but mm-hmm. it was something of that, you know, in that ilk, but right. She's now at UVA. And, you know, she said basically, you know, it should be Section 230, which, you know, is the whole sticking point here. It should be amended to reserve the immunity for platforms acting like responsible guardians of our privacy. But if they don't take reasonable steps to prevent unlawful uses of their services that create harm to others, then they don't get immunity. So, you know, if we incentivize these platforms to proactively tackle illegality, you know, hate speech, bullying, violent content, you know, rather than encouraging it, then, you know, let's reward them for it. And if they don't, then if they don't make a reasonable, if they don't take reasonable steps, then they should be open to liability.
Yeah.
Open, you know, for lawsuits. And I guarantee you, I've said this over and over again, if they're open for any kind of litigation, they'll clean this stuff. This stuff will stop immediately because, you know, people would sue them out of existence.
Okay, one last break. Back with more Andy Parker right after these words.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
As far as I'm concerned, when it comes to especially a platform like Facebook, which is so abusive to its users. It is, I mean, I could start listing examples a mile long and be here, you know, well past Christmas or something. You know, it would take forever to name all of the things, but I think some form of regulation on that, some form to incentivize some change to actually benefit users of these platforms would be an immense accomplishment.
Yeah, because, you know, listen, this you know, posting violent content and murder on social media, it's not free speech.
Right.
It's savagery, and it's undermining the very fabric of our society. And I think, as you saw in my announcement video, you know, these platforms do is they radicalize these kids, you know, or kids, adults, whomever, you know, with this disinformation and this hate speech. I mean, all this cesspool that radicalizes them, and you know, where the guns and Google hook comes in, it's you know, there is an inextricable relationship, an evil symbiotic relationship between gun violence and social media. Mm-hmm. I mean, and these kids, you know, they were kids. I mean, they were more boys than men, and they bought assault weapons right after their 18th birthday, and one, you know, shot up the store in Buffalo, and one shot up the, you know, went to the school in Uvalde.
Yeah.
And it's just on and on and on. So, you know, if we don't do something about this, you know, and that's why, you know, the Andy's Fight Pack is doing something different, because it is combining the two. It's linking these two, you know, evils together. Mm-hmm. To try and affect some change.
Yeah, it's really important as far as shaving the sharp corners off of our gun culture in this country. And one of the examples I always talk about, Andy, is every time there's another election cycle, certainly in the midterms, and we're seeing some of this now, you get a lot of mostly, and I would say 99.9% of them are Republicans, putting out videos in which they're showing their followers how to shoot things that they don't like, whether it's a piece of legislation, whether it's their opponent. I mean, we saw an ad a couple of months ago of a candidate. Yeah. I think it was an incumbent candidate. Well, Greitens was he's an ongoing offender when it comes to that. He is years and years he's been doing that sort of thing. But there was another one where it was sort of an old West shootout where you got a Republican Democratic leadership, for God's sake.
And that was the guy that's running against Mark Kelly.
Right.
I mean, which makes it even more despicable, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
It is. I mean, that's the thing. These people, you know, and I would say it's 99.99999% Republican.
Yeah.
And they have no, you know, they know better, you know, because I've tried to reason with, you know, various congressional, you know, folks. And I mean, from Susan Collins to my quote unquote rep, Morgan Griffith, they know better. They know better. But they're, you know, they lack the courage to go against their, you know, their batshit crazy constituents.
Yeah.
And let's make no mistake. Those people, they are batshit crazy. I mean, you can't reason with them. You know, anything that you do that suggests, okay, well, maybe, you know, an assault weapons ban is a good idea. No. I mean, anything. We had I'll give you an example. We had, you know, Virginia has probably the most specialty license plates in the country. And one of them that we had, I mean, normally it's like, you know, save the whales or something like that. And it's like, check the box. That's fine. Make that plate. Well, some of our folks came up with one that said, stop gun violence. That was it. Not let's take away your guns. We're coming after your guns. Just stop gun violence. And it showed a hand held up with a heart, a broken heart.
How terribly offensive. So offensive.
Oh, it's terrible. Well, the House Majority Leader at the time, who is now the Majority Leader, a guy named Todd Gilbert, who looks like this, you know, right out of a Nazi, you know, skinhead, you know, horror movie.
Oh my God.
So he's the guy that said, you know, literally said, if, you know, if you pass this bill or, you know, this resolution or for this license plate, it's tantamount. It's the first step toward, you know, repealing the Second Amendment. Now, how, I mean, God, that's what you're dealing damn. With.
Yeah.
It's absolutist. I mean, it is a complete absolutist view. And, you know, they take that, you know, that opinion to guns, to, you know, we're seeing now it's like, oh, how dare you, you know, how can you raid the president's, you know, residence? If look what the FBI is doing, you know, if they did that to him, he could do it for Duke. Yes, because he's a freaking criminal. That's why they're doing it.
Yeah.
But they, you know, it's like, no, we only want to support the police and the FBI if it's going after other people, not us.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, you know, I was going to say, too, about those videos, those campaign commercials or whatever the hell you call them, where they're shooting the Affordable right. Care Act or they're shooting the tax code. Rand Paul yeah. has one where he's firing an AR-15 at the tax code. My God.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you see that circulating mainly on social media. These aren't necessarily TV ad buys. This is viral on social media. And I keep wondering why the hell they're allowed to stay up. Clearly, this is telling followers of these candidates that, yeah, it's okay to shoot the things you don't like in politics.
Yeah.
And then yeah. we see things like the insurrection happening on Capitol Hill and similar examples. And, well, yeah, you can kind of draw that relationship between political leaders saying, yes, it's okay to shoot the things you don't like, and then people going out and actually shooting the things they don't like.
Right, because you have a lot of people that... that aren't the sharpest tools in the shed.
Yeah.
You know, all these people that have been convicted in the January 6th attack. Well, you know, Donald Trump told me to do that.
Yeah.
That's why
yeah.
I win. It's
and like, they see it on Facebook, and Facebook becomes yes. or Twitter for that matter, or Instagram and on down the line becomes a platform for that yep. kind of eliminationist rhetoric. And there's no excuse for it.
No, there isn't. So, you know, if I have also said many times that if Facebook and Google, Twitter does a decent job in content moderation, but that's probably why one of the reasons that the Republicans are all pissed off at them. But, if these platforms had the same, you know, if these platforms had the same edit, sorry, letting the dogs out. If they had to have the same editorial oversight as CNN or the Washington Post or hell, even Fox News, which is probably not the greatest example, but no. any you know media you know outlet, you wouldn't have this stuff. But they have no content moderation, and they don't want it. And you know, again, that's what. You know, what Andy's fight is trying to do, you know, we need to, you know, it's easy to get the candidates, it's not going to be a hard sell for me to go to, say Abby Spanberger and say, hey, you know, I want to help your campaign here. We're a super PAC, so we're not going to tell you what we're going to do, but we're going to, you know, we're going to do something.
Yeah.
You know, it's, because you're, you know, because you're good on the gun issue, but it's another thing. It's a harder sell to get, you know, the commitment from some of these folks that say, yeah, we need to do something about social media. Mm-hmm. We need to fix this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's going to be kind of an interesting, a challenge there, but you know, it's like, you know, when I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee at the behest of Senator Mazie Hirono, her legal counsel, I, you know, when we filed, an FTC complaint against Facebook, you know, literally the week after Francis Haugen's testimony. And I called him and I said, Jeff, you know, do you think this is going to move the needle? Because it got a lot of press and it got a lot of attention and, you know, a lot of buzz. And I thought, well, you know, maybe this is what's going to create some momentum on this. He said, You might see something on antitrust, which is kind of percolating out there even as we speak. He said, but the problem that you said, the problem is everybody knows what the problem is. Mm-hmm. You know, they know what the problem is with social media. They just don't know how to fix it.
Right.
And so I would suggest, you know, hopefully if any of them are listening, you know, to the earlier piece, I said, there's your solution right there. Just let's, you know, we don't have to burn the whole thing down. We can tweak it.
Well, the website is andysfight.com. I have a link in the description for that. Also, you can follow Andy on Twitter at AndyParkerVA. I got a link to that as well. And what was the name of your book again, Andy?
For Allison?
Yes.
The Murder of a Young Journalist and a Father's Fight for Gun Safety. And
okay.
I believe it's still on Amazon. If it hadn't sold out, you know. Somebody, we'll be able to find you a copy if you need one.
Okay, so. Sounds good. Well, I'll put a link in the description too for the book as well. Cool. And then everyone's on their own from there. It's sold out. Great. You know, great for you. But thank you, Andy.
No, great for the publisher. I didn't make much money on it. It was not. Okay. You know, the interesting thing is that, you know, my agent, you know, who was, you know, her first book. Mm-hmm. Her first book was The Bridges of Madison County. Right.
Oh, so my I thought, God. Wow,
man, I'm in good hands here.
Well, yeah.
She shopped it around. She shopped it around to all these publishers and they, you know, universally said, love the story, hate the subject matter. You know, books about gun violence, they just don't or anything even remotely associated with it. It's a tough sell.
Yeah.
So I went with, you know, I got it published through a small publisher, but not with the kind of juice that you know, a Simon and Schuster or a Little Brown have. But, you know, hey, I did it for me. I did it, you know, for my friends and family. You know, it was a very cathartic experience. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's a good story. I mean, it's, you know, I think Allison would have been proud of it, mm-hmm. You know, and the folks that did read it, and I got good cover quotes from, you know, folks, Tim Kaine and
huge list of A-listers in there. Yeah, absolutely. Tim Kaine did the forward, right?
He did the forward. Yeah. Terry McAuliffe did the cover quote, as did, you know, the one that really surprised me was Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yes.
It's like, man, he read it. I mean, you know, right. Most of the time, you know, it's like, oh, hey, here's this book. It's like, no, he actually read the thing.
Yeah. Just incredible. And it's an amazing memorial for Allison, getting her story on the record. I think that is incredibly important as well. It's not just a, you know, one of those things where we dash off a memoir and hope people buy it. This is something that commemorates, I think, an incredible journalist who had an immense future ahead of her that was deprived because of the proliferation of firearms in this country, at least partially. And I thank you so much, Andy, for coming on today and telling your story, telling Allison's story. It was a real genuine honor. And, you know, we throw those kinds of words, those sentiments around quite often, but this was genuine. And I thank you so much for sharing.
Well, I appreciate it, Bob, and thanks for allowing me to tell my story.
Yeah, best of luck with Andy's fight. If there's anything I can do to help out, if you need to post another Twitter video, just let me know. I'm your guy.
He's Bob is not only a great podcaster, but he's a technical guru too.
Right. Yes. Please keep saying that, even though it's not entirely true, but okay. All right, Andy. Thank you so much, my friend. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I see you holding on even when you're tired of trying. I see you standing strong. It feels like your heart is dying. Trying to find